This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 15. Catriona's grip on Tom's hand tightened. She whispered through clenched teeth as they turned. "Stay quiet." She continued to hold his hand even as the dog returned to spin in circles at her feet. The girl took a deep breath, straightened, and smiled at the man.
"Oh, she's adorable."
She stooped to pick up a piece of drying driftwood that had once been part of a deck chair in Ireland, and tumbled it in a lazy arc through the air. In doing so, she dropped Tom's hand, his palm suddenly cold and empty. The dog leapt, missed the catch, spun and arched its back like a swimming otter, and in one continuously fluid movement, disappeared in a brown and white blur of energy after the stick. "That's it," the man said. "You'll no get rid of her now."
"She's gorgeous," said Catriona,
her smile vaporizing the dregs of the stubborn storm. Closer to them now, Tom saw that the thing angled over the visitor's shoulder was actually a pickaxe. The man, Disney-esque with his red beard and ruddy face, shucked his sack from his shoulders and dropped it to the ground. The dog streaked in, dumped its trophy at the girl's feet, sat down and wiped the grass with its tail.
"What's her name?"
Catriona asked as she retrieved the chair leg. Tom folded his arms. "Sparky. A right wee bundle of fire she is." At the mention of her name, Sparky's eyes swiveled to her master and back to the girl, the tempo of her metronomic tail rising from a slow waltz to the frenzied thump, thump, thump of a Muppet's drumbeat. Catriona arched the chair leg into the sea with aboriginal skill. The man nodded his red beard to the cottage. "You folks staying here then?" The girl glanced at Tom and lied with a consummate ease he'd not seen before.
"My mother's thinking of buying the cottage. We're on a sort of test drive."
In the same breath, she quickly added, "Digging for gold?" And Tom could not help seeing the question as a ploy to control the conversation, to park it in the safe zone. He shifted his weight from his left leg to his right, uncrossed and crossed his arms again. The man chuckled and Tom bit his lower lip. First, Catriona had tried to convince him that the cottage belonged to a friend of her uncle, and now she and her mother were on a mission to buy it. He'd suspected her of lying, but now he knew. Help stood in front of them, and Catriona threw a stick and laughed and lied like a con woman. He was struck by the contrast between her inept little girl performance earlier and a smiling trickster he saw now. "If there's gold out there, I'd know about it," the beard chuckled. "Nah, hen. Just checking the storm's left as we a path." Tom sensed a movement by the window, and almost saw Callum's twisted face as he ducked in pain to the side of the glass.
"Just coming, Mum,"
Catriona shouted, and then threw the stick again and said, "I hope the path's okay." "I never knew Ferguson was selling," the stranger said, rolling a cigarette. Catriona put a hand to her mouth.
"Oh, God," she cried. "Don't say anything. I don't think I was supposed to tell."
"Relax, lass. Me and the old codger don't exactly meet at the same parties. Anyhow, I'd rather see you folks on my way past here than him ony day." With another tossed stick, the man hoisted his pack, angled his pickaxe again and left, Sparky skittering back and forward along the path, unwilling to leave her new best friend but worried by the fading smell of doggy treats. At last she followed her belly, carrying it in her excited yap and fading staccato bursts away from Cregan. Catriona waved and Tom stood with a pasted and uncomfortable smile on his face. The silence of their passing was filled by the gurgle of a nearby stream running happily to the sea, the gentle lap of the outgoing tide, and a squeaking door as Catriona opened it to check on Callum. Tom grasped her wrist.
What are you doing?
Instead of answering him, she spun on her heels.
Wait here,
she commanded and ran inside. Incredulous, Tom stared after her, and then at the retreating rescuer as he dwindled slowly along the storm-tattered path. Resisting the urge to follow her, Tom found a spot by the stream and waited out his anger. This anger was directed as much at himself as the girl. He felt a fool, standing like a dumb attendant during the girl's performance, and the feeling chewed at his guts trying to get out. In the distance, the tiny figure stopped and, as Tom watched, swung his pickaxe like an animated icon for men at work. When Catriona joined him, Tom was ready to burst. Sitting on a rock, he stoned the stream with venomous thrusts, killing his anger as though it lived in the pebble-strewn bed. She sat beside him, and Tom let fly.
Is anything you see the truth? You don't understand. No, you don't understand. If that man is a mobile, we could have help here. Just like that.
He snapped the fingers of his left hand and looked at her coldly.
You better give me a good reason not to catch up with him.
Catriona's horrified gaze looked at the distant figure and back to Tom.
You can't tell anyone about us.
Ever?
Is that it? Even when I get out, I just forget that I ever saw you. How can I get help without saying anything? What's wrong, Catriona?
And then with a flash of satisfaction, Tom saw Catriona's composure crinkle as he said,
He's not your uncle, is he?
Catriona looked away again and stayed silent.
You can't even say the word without tripping on it, Catriona. This isn't your cottage or even a friend's. Callum doesn't want me here because I might spoil whatever's going on.
That did it.
Whatever's going on? What's that supposed to mean?
Tom swung round to face her head on.
I'm not your enemy, but how can I avoid talking about you? It's ridiculous. He needs help even if he's too stubborn to accept it. If his leg's not set properly, he could be crippled for life.
Catriona's belligerent tone softened to a quiet whisper.
He won't listen. What if I just do it? Whatever happens, I'll be out of here soon. If I can't phone, then it's over the hill. You said the path led to the village. I could be there tonight. Could have a doctor or maybe the police with a boat. No! No police!
The girl's voice reflected the panic in her eyes. Tom reeled back with the ferociousness of her outburst.
What's going on, Catriona? What is he? A criminal?
Catriona's mouth twisted into a grimace that broke through the mask she'd worn since the boy had met her. It was moulded by bitter experience, a Pavlovian response to his accusation.
A criminal?
She spat.
Yes, that's exactly what they're saying.
But I've got another name for it. Tom took her hands in his and looked into her dark eyes. They sparkled as they filled with liquid misery. He resisted the urge to comfort her, reluctant to stop the flow. He squeezed her hand gently and urged her to go on.
According to half the country, he's a criminal, but I just call him Father.
Chapter 16. Catriona shed her lies like scales of armour. She was raised close to the small town of Plockton on the northwest coast of Scotland, not Dumfries. She was an only child, her parents, as far as she knew, happy. Catriona attended a small school where everyone knew everyone else. She lived on the far side of Loch Carradale, where her father operated a small salmon farm. They were not wealthy. The man refused to use the hormones that made his competitors' fish grow at 5 times their normal rate. But at last he found a niche in the health-conscious public who could afford the higher prices he had to charge. Tom somehow knew this. As Catriona talked over the sound of the happy stream, the words she used took shape and colour in his mind. Red for a lie and green for truth. Even as he looked into her eyes,
A hazy half-thought saw the words beauty and danger flit the air between them like wind-blown leaves of emerald. And so Tom learned that Callum had struggled for 10 years to make his business work, and finally they were settled, their struggles behind them. Catriona's father took her across the loch each morning to meet the school bus and collected her in the evening. She would often help with some of the chores like pouring feed or cleaning equipment. At weekends she would have her friends to stay or overnight with them in Plockton. They were happy. Everyone was happy. Or so Catriona thought. Her mother, Sophia, kept her dissatisfaction quiet until one sunny day she announced that she'd met someone else and was leaving home. The change in her father was dramatic. A giant of a man, the girl had only seen his strength, but as the courts first took his home and then his farm and finally his daughter from him, he crumbled to a dishevelled wreck she barely recognised. As the pair sat by the stream, green leaves swirled in non-existent gusts around the girl, but she didn't seem to notice them, and to Tom, they were no more than passing trees on a journey through a forest, in front of his eyes but buried in his mind. He flicked at them with an automatic hand as though buzzed by a half-noticed fly. Catriona had moved to Edinburgh with her mother to live with her new boyfriend. The man's name was Victor, a Croatian-born restaurateur. How he met her mother when they occupied such different worlds, Catriona didn't know. He was charming and good to Catriona, but the girl could not settle in Edinburgh. She missed her friends, she missed her freedom, but most of all, she missed her father. Forced to sell the farm, the man moved to the city to be near his daughter, but things were never the same. He would take her to the park or walk around the castle, but gone was the gruff, fun-loving man filled with purpose and life, stolen by a shell that laughed only to sound normal in front of his daughter. A year after the split, Catriona's mother took her on holiday to Victor's hometown in Zagreb. It was beautiful, but Catriona was unaware of the real purpose behind the visit. She met his family and, despite the upset, loved the country and its people. It was 2 months after they got back, as spring flowers bloomed in Princess Street Gardens, that her mother told her they were moving to Croatia. I cried forever. My father shouted at my mother, at Victor. And finally, 2 days before we were due to leave, we ran away. Dad tried to get the court to stop the move, but Mum had custody. She could live wherever she liked. According to Catriona, Sophia had told her daughter that she would still see her father during the holidays. He would still be a part of her life. But Catriona recalled the same words when they'd moved to Edinburgh. It was a lie, and their daughter knew it. At first they slept in the car, burying themselves in quiet country roads, often in forests, sometimes by a loch. They ate chocolate and drank pop. Eventually they dumped the car when the media took up the story. A nationwide hunt tracked what they called a dangerous and unstable absent father. According to the headlines, he'd kidnapped the carefree youngster. The distraught mother was leaving the country to escape his irrational behaviour. She was frightened for her own safety, they had said, but more so for that of her daughter. The pair took a train to Ardrossan and crossed in a crowded boat full of tourists to the island of Arran. Her father remembered the seldom used cottage from their island treks. They walked in overnight, found Craigan empty, and broke a window latch in the back. That was 2 weeks ago. They felt safe. Her father borrowed the boat, which had been turned upside down on the ramp. He found the engine in the outhouse and left Catriona as he gathered supplies from Lochranza. We knew it couldn't last forever, she said, and her words faded to wisps of air. But when you arrived, it changed everything. Tom didn't know what to say. Perhaps he should have felt guilty, but he didn't. He had no family that he could remember, and was actually jealous of the girl with two parents arguing over who should live with her. He remembered through the delirium of his arrival the reaction of her father, and he now understood what a shock it must have been to him. Reports of a man and a girl in a remote cottage rescuing a boy would be a catastrophe, But still, they couldn't turn him away either. That's why he risked the storm, Tom said. He tried to convince me he was on his own when it was obvious he wasn't. But although Tom now understood and sympathised with their plight, he could not just leave them without asking for help at the village. A doctor would surely lead to the police, and try as he might, the boy could not figure a way around the dilemma. Unless the man's condition improved over the next few hours, he would ignore both their calls for silence. He'd walk over the hill and bring help whether they wanted him to or not. Tom bit the urge to tell her this. He looked up the hill and picked out the path cutting up and right across its belly like a drunken surgeon's scar. It was getting late. Starting now would be an unnecessary risk. He would give them night, and in the morning, if Callum was no better, he would walk out and bring them a doctor, and to hell with the consequences.
DreamWorks.com.